This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
As the Brian Koberger trial inches closer to opening arguments, the defense strategy is starting to come into focus. And honestly, it's looking less like a roadmap to acquittal and more like a scramble to soften the blow of a guilty verdict. With Judge Hippler slamming the door shut on third-party culprit theory and firmly denying yet another attempt to delay the trial, Koberger's team is running out of lanes. And fast. So now they're reaching backwards. Way back. All the way to Pennsylvania. Calling in everyone from a former high school advisor to a jail guard who supervised Koberger's post-arrest. The goal, is it to prove innocence or is it to humanize him? To paint a picture of a guy who was once awkward, misunderstood, and maybe even sympathetic. Before things went very, very dark, allegedly. But let's be real, calling someone like a corrections officer as a character witness isn't exactly standard playbook material. It's kind of a Hail Mary. And if those witnesses show up uncooperative or worse, hostile, the whole strategy could blow up in their faces. There's a lot of these witnesses who are fighting to not have to show up and testify. Then there's the motion to introduce alternate suspects, completely denied. The judge called it speculative, unsupportive, and not backed by a shred of admissible evidence. So what was the play there? Was it an actual legal maneuver or just more noise designed to plant doubt in the public or a future jury pool? Tell me what you guys think in the comment section of this video on YouTube, if that's where you're watching us. If you're not on YouTube and you're listening to our podcast, wherever it may be sure to check out our YouTube channel. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. You'll find us there. Hit subscribe, first off. Make that the first thing you do. And make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform as well. And then interact. Tell us what your thoughts are on the case, where it stands right now, and what we're about to talk about here. To help us break all of this down, I'm joined by former FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer, decades of investigative experience and courtroom savvy. Jennifer's the perfect voice to analyze what these moves really mean, how they might play to a jury, and whether the witness strategy is anything more than a last-ditch effort to save Koberger from a death sentence. So let's get into it. The jail guard, he is going to be a witness. He was the guard post-arrest out there in Pennsylvania. He's a witness who is a corrections officer, supervised Koberger at that point in time. Defense may want to show that Koberger was calm, cooperative, and not displaying erratic behavior post-arrest. But was he, though? I mean, this is someone who, if we remember back at that point in time, and I'm curious to get your memory of what was going on at that point in time, one of the first things I think we heard about was his bizarre demands for ways of cooking his food in prison of don't use pans that have touched meat, as if he's at the Four Seasons. I couldn't even imagine asking that at the Four Seasons, but he's asking it in jail. What do you think that's going to, let's start with the jail. We'll talk about the cooking methods later, but the jail, the guard, what do you think the jail guard is going to bring to this in terms of helping or maybe even hurting Koberger?
Well, this is another tightrope. I mean, was one thing that he observed going to be positive for Koberger, such as you mentioned, that he was calm, that remember there were allegations, in fact, it's documented, that he said, was anyone else arrested? Mm-hmm. We know about that early on. Did he say further little tidbits like that, that this guard overheard, or that he said straight to the guard? So I think they're going to want to just try to cloud up what might have happened, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is something that Bundy allegedly did too, where they dangle out these possible carrots that somebody else was involved, mm-hmm. When really it's just strategic and smart to say things like that because it can be distracting away from his own guilt. So I'll be interested to see, but I'll also think that this guard will also probably have information that might not be so positive just from my past knowing what guards see and what they take note of. I mean, they get to see these guys 24/7 almost, at least when they're on shift, and they're supposed to be watching them and monitoring them. And imagine if 24/7 every single minute by somebody. It'll be interesting to see if there were mistakes made by Koberger that could be positive for.
How often do we see guards called in cases like this? It's hard to say like this because there's not a lot that are like this. But how often do we see a guard like this called? And is it kind of like a desperate move that this is the person you're going to be calling as the defense? Or is this, I don't know, it seems like this is a weird one compared to witnesses to the crime, about the crime. The guard itself, like what, how unorthodox is this or is it not?
Well, you know, when you look back, let's take a case that we both know well, it's the Delphi case.
Yeah.
You may recall that there were issues in terms of the guards actually overhearing the conversations with the defense attorney and Richard Allen.
Yeah.
And that really became a huge issue, what was recorded, what wasn't, what they might have heard, what could have been passed on. And, you know, that judge in that particular case kind of shut everything down. But in this case, you know, Judge Hippler is fine with, I think, allowing some of these, some of the information in. And obviously we see that because he's on that witness list. I'm going to be interested to see, though, if he's actually called or if this, again, is just somebody on the list.
Yeah. So a lot of people that are on the list. Some are, you know, contesting this, saying, you know, we do not want to go and have to testify. A lot of them are trying, they're trying to compel them to testify. If they get the subpoenas and they contest the subpoenas, if forced to testify, unwilling witnesses, you know, they can be hostile sometimes, unhelpful on the stand, even if they're being brought in to try and stand up for this guy, especially if they think he's guilty. If they're like, yeah, I mean, I knew him in high school, but he was, you know, I don't know him now, and I could see him being the one who did this. This is kind of a big bet that it feels Ann Taylor is placing on these people to show up and provide anything that's really going to be of help.
Well, Tony, it's a slippery slope. And once you put somebody up on the stand like that, though, they can come off sometimes, as you mentioned, hostile. They can come off as not being truthful. We saw that recently in the Karen Reed trial, where certain witnesses were called that did not want to be there. And they made just a horrible impression of themselves because they didn't want to be there and they came off hostile. So, again, this is it's a slippery slope for Ann Taylor to be going after this. But I see it as her overall pattern of kind of, you know, putting up what might and might not work. This is a true throw the spaghetti on the refrigerator and see if it sticks situation. And that's why I think she has this tremendously long and unusual witness list.
Let's talk about the motions that have been denied. The third party culprit motion, Judge Hippler said, nope, we're not doing that. He denied it. And the sealed motion to present alternate suspects, citing lack of direct evidence and pure speculation. We went through that document the other day. And I guess I want to know what the hell do you think Ann Taylor was thinking with submitting that, other than let's see if this spaghetti sticks too? Because obviously none of the people on that list had anything to do with this, and nor would it ever make it into the courtroom, considering they've all been cleared by the FBI. And it, I mean, what do you think she was doing with that? Was that just to create some reasonable doubt in the potential jury pool that exists out there in the ether right now, so that when they do get that pool, maybe they'll remember, remember there was that alternate suspect list, but they don't understand fully what that matters or how that what that means, and that it really didn't mean anything. What's your take on it?
Well, I think it's twofold. I think first of all, what does she have to lose?
Yeah,
you know, trying to throw this out there, create these long motion documents that this judge has to go through, decipher, put the law to it. The prosecution has to answer, and that they can hope somehow, is not denied. This was an easy one, though, for Judge Hippler, and specifically, you know, when she tried to cite the DNA, which the DNA wasn't even on scene. Mm-hmm. So it's just really, in a sense, I think, a bit mind-boggling to those of us who know this case inside and out that she would attempt this. But mm-hmm. by the same token, she has nothing to lose. So yeah. What else is she gonna do? She's got to throw something out there, kind of like the alibi of he was driving around in the middle of the night, which puts him exactly doing what the cell tower information says he was doing, which was driving around. To me, that was a win for the prosecution when she said that. I think the other thing, Tony, is we have seen the play, and even though a lot of it was redacted of this motion, how much social media can play into these cases. And certainly, I think she wants to get a lot of her contentions, all be them, far-fetched, out there in the social media venue, and certainly feed the pro-burgers, because yeah. there is a group that is definitely pro-release of Brian Koberger.
There is, and I do not understand one iota of it. they come to our YouTube channel, and they don't really bring anything. They just like to say, he's innocent. Okay, and why is that? And then they like to say, you don't know anything. Okay, well, what do you have? You don't know anything. Okay, well, I do know some things, but what do you know? Why are you backing this up? You hate Brian Koberger. Okay, that's how the conversations go. I don't understand where any of them are coming from. I mean, you, I'm sure, have seen them out there. They're nowhere near the level of Karen Reed, FKR folks, but they're a little group that's budding. Like it's like they were born recently and they're toddlers right now and they're learning how to use their keyboards. Where are they coming from? Where do you glean anything off of these people as to where they're coming from, as to why they think Koberger is innocent, or they just want to join a club that nobody else is a part of yet?
Well, I saw the group starting to form actually very, very early on. It was just so few in number. But it's getting traction, I think, because some of the people from the other trials that mm-hmm. are now over, they're kind of going over there and jumping on the bandwagon, right?
Yeah,
why
they're lost.
Why is the interesting thought?
Yeah.
You know, why in the world? Everybody wants to see Brian Koberger's rights protected. There is no better advocate probably out there than Ann Taylor herself.
Mm-hmm.
She has delayed this trial. She has tried every avenue to try to get justice for her client, which she should be doing. So it's not like he's not well represented. And it's not just her. He also has a slew of lawyers that have worked or are working on his case. There has been seemingly no limitation of budget. I mean, the amount of money being spent, the raises, the personnel. The court system has allowed, in other words, there's no expense spared from mm-hmm. making sure Brian Koberger receives a fair trial. So Tony, to your point, I think a lot of it is just noise, and people try to make a name for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're doing. That's how I see it.
Retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer with some smart, sobering insight into what the defense is actually doing and what they're hoping to get out of it. And here's what's clear. This isn't about proving Brian Koberger didn't do it. At least it appears that way by who they're calling at this point. Feels like that ship has sailed. The door to the alternate suspect strategy, firmly shut out by the court. Judge Hippler made it crystal clear there's no trial delay coming, which means what we're seeing now is about damage control. It's about painting just enough of a human story to influence one juror, just one, when it comes to sentencing. The jail guard? That's a wild card. Best case, he says Koberger was calm and compliant post-arrest. Worst case, he shares troubling or bizarre interactions, like Koberger demanding vegan cookware, like he's in a Whole Foods, not in a holding cell, which did happen, by the way. that might play a little strange to the jury. The guy who's being accused of killing four college students somehow thinks it's going to be appropriate to even say that aloud? I need my food not to have ever touched meat, or my pan that my food is cooked in never to have touched meat. I'd say convict him on that. To each their own, but once you're in jail, once you're in prison, sorry, that shit goes out the window. And I have zero pity for you. Deal with it. It's a problem. Every witness they pull from the past brings risk. And if one of them shows up, resentful or reluctant, it could undercut the defense's entire "he's not all bad" narrative. And then there's the growing noise online. As we touched on, a curious little movement is forming, people defending Koberger without offering a single piece of counter evidence, just blind allegiance, vague conspiracy, and a lot of keyboard courage, and suddenly a community they can relate to. But the truth is, Koberger's legal team has had every opportunity, every resource, and every procedural courtesy. The trial hasn't been rushed. It's been methodically prepared by both sides. So as we move into the final stretch before opening arguments, the picture is getting clearer. The prosecution is staying focused, the judge is holding the line, and the defense, they're trying to make something, anything, stick. Will it work, I guess, is the big question. Tell me what your thoughts are in the comments section on YouTube. If you're listening to our podcast on iHeart, on Apple Podcasts, wherever it may be, hit subscribe there. And on Apple Podcasts, you can go to our premium option and get everything ad-free if you'd like that. Or if you'd like to do it on YouTube, you can do that as well. We even have a premium option on YouTube where you can get access to all of our reporting before it's released to the public right away. And there's stuff you get days, sometimes weeks before everybody else. Check that on YouTube. And at the very least, just comment. That's free. Nothing. You don't have to sign up for anything extra there. Hit subscribe, comment, and let us know what your thoughts are. But if you really like it and you want to help support the show, become a paid subscriber over there, a supporter, and get access to those extra perks. We'll have extra smaller conversations and such as well with our supporters as well. And you can also get your voice heard before everybody else because you can comment on everything before anybody else gets a chance. So check that out on YouTube. Nice little extra thing we just started up there. Until next time, want to hear your thoughts. We will talk again real soon. My name is Tony Bruschi. Thank you for watching.
Want to stay on top of the latest true crime cases? Press subscribe now and never miss a breaking update from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.